Earlier this month, President Obama announced the United States would increase its military presence in Afghanistan. But more than just extra troops are going to the country, they'll be accompanied by a surge of private contractors. What's more, the government has contracted with an additional outside firm to help keep track of all the contractors already in the country. We are joined now by Jeremy Scahill, a correspondent for The Nation and author of the book Blackwater, The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. I'm very pleased to welcome him back to our show. Hello.
Great to be back with you, Len.
Do we need a private audit to know how many private contractors are currently on the United States payroll in Afghanistan?
Right. Clearly, someone's been reading Kafka. I mean, you can't get more Kafkaesque than this. You know, the fact is that from the very beginning of the invasion of Iraq, many private contractors were hired to do the business of policing other contractors. And what you were referencing is a story that I did recently about the big accounting firm Deloitte & Touche. They count among their top directors Tom Davis, who is he's a former Republican congressman. He was the chair of the oversight committee in the Congress. He left Congress in 2008, took up employment with Deloitte, and then this company started getting all of these contracts to participate in the oversight structure of multiple inspectors general, including the Iraq inspector general and the Afghanistan inspector general, and of course, SIGTARP.
He was the chairman of the House Government Reform Committee.
Right. So before that, he had been in the private sector, and he's always been advocating a greater role for the private sector in oversight. So he did it officially, and then he goes and his company wins these contracts.
But don't many congressmen take jobs in the private sector when they leave the House or Senate, often in industries that they have regulated?
No question about it. I mean, that's the classic revolving door. That's how business works in Washington. It's not even a revolving door, Lenny. It's more like a bridge. They just walk back and forth from this private sector to government and back again.
And your article on this in The Nation focuses on Deloitte & Touche. What has the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, also known as SIGAR, hired them to do?
Well, I got an email from SIGAR this morning, angry about something I had said on TV last night, and they are offended at the notion that we're reporting that Deloitte & Touche is involved with oversight activities. They say that all they do is create fonts and graphics for reports that are presented to Congress, but I got the contract, and the contract contradicts that. The contract says that Deloitte specifically prepares congressional testimony, that they prepare responses for the record to inquiries from lawmakers, and that they are responsible for monitoring the activities of other oversight agencies. So they're deeply involved with this, and the government is trying to downplay it.
They also are working for TARP, USAID.
Right. I mean, this firm is really, if you go through the federal contractor database, this is the premier firm that is being hired to prepare these reports for Congress. And I've talked to members of Congress that work on oversight issues, and they have great concerns over using a private company to do what is essentially a government function, and that is communicating with the Congress reports and other data that are discovered in oversight activities.
Are they kind of the Blackwater of auditing?
Well, I wouldn't. More like the Walmart of auditing. You know, they're a massive firm. They have the capability. They have enough people with the requisite security clearance to do this. You know, they're sort of the biggest guys in the room.
Haven't many people in Congress expressed concern that SIGAR has had significant ongoing difficulty in recruiting adequate qualified staff?
Right, and it begs the question, why then are we hiring these private firms when we don't even have adequate government employees, and then the firms create their own set of problems? Senator Claire McCaskill, a Democrat, signed a letter in recent days with Senator Coburn, a Republican, asking basically for the president to review the work of SIGAR, and one of the things they zeroed in on is precisely what you just said.
Because SIGAR doesn't have all that many auditors working for it. It has a limited budget, but it can then spend more money to have some outside firm do what it's supposed to be doing by itself?
Well, that's a very good point. I mean, if you're going to spend, you have a $23 million budget total since SIGAR started a little over a year ago, and they're spending upwards of $7 million hiring a private firm. Why not use that money for existing government employees to do this audit work? I think that SIGAR should have a greatly expanded budget given the scope of contracting that you laid out at the beginning of this show.
Now, how does the number of contractors who are currently in Afghanistan compared to our official military presence?
Well, there. I mean, this is a stunning story that I can't believe it hasn't gotten more attention. Right now, we have in Iraq 68,000 U.S. troops, and there are 104,000 private contractors right now as we speak.
So it's not even a one-to-one, which is usually the case.
Right. That became the norm under President Bush and Vice President Cheney. Now, the Obama administration is not only equaling that, but they're surpassing Bush-era reliance on private contractors. And with the surge, it's going to grow to a ratio of about 160,000 at the top end to 100,000 troops.
So we have 30,000 additional troops. And how many additional private contractors?
According to the report that came out this week from the Congressional Research Service, there could be as many as 56,000 additional contractors.
Weren't Democrats criticizing the Bush administration's reliance on private contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Some of them were. I mean, this was not really a major issue in the Congress. You had Henry Waxman and Representative Jan Schakowsky and a handful of other Democrats, Claire McCaskill and Jim Webb, that sort of made some noise about this. President Obama, when he was in the Senate, and I give him credit for this, was one of the few lawmakers that actually realized that this was a big problem. Unfortunately, though, President Obama and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, despite the lip service they paid on the campaign trail to standing up to these companies, have actually expanded them. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Hillary Clinton is now the boss of Blackwater, and she vowed to ban them had she become president. She now is guarded in part by Blackwater when she goes to Afghanistan. They have the contract to guard Ambassador Eikenberry. There were Democrats, including the Secretary of State and President, that made noise about this, but then they've turned around and done what Bush was doing.
Is part of the problem that Blackwater is one of the few companies that is qualified or has experience in doing these sorts of things, so that even if you want to get rid of them, there's no one else to go to?
Right. I talked to members of Congress that sit on the Intelligence Committee, and when they inquired about why the Obama administration continues to use Blackwater indefinitely in Iraq, they were told that it's because Blackwater has a particular kind of aircraft that other companies don't have that is particularly good for very fast paramilitary travel.
It was reported recently that Blackwater worked with the CIA on its assassinations program. In the January 2010 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, Adam Saralsky reports that the list of targets on the list included A.Q. Khan, the Pakistani scientist who shared nuclear knowledge with Iran, Libya, and North Korea. Why would the CIA turn to Blackwater for this type of mission? Of course, they're not called Blackwater anymore, are they?
Well, they have about 12 different iterations these days. It seems to change. 2 weeks ago, it was Z, XE.
Spelled XE.
Yeah, now it's U.S. Training Center. You know, next week, it'll be the Fluffy Bunny Patrol. I mean, who really knows what everyone in the industry and in Blackwater still calls it Blackwater. To answer your question, Blackwater provided the Bush and Cheney administration with the ultimate plausible deniability machine. When you have a company that's run by a billionaire, as Blackwater is, who is actually offering to pay for operations himself, that means there's no paper trail. There's no bank transactions. You actually have a guy that has the capability, has the former Special Forces guys, believes in the mission, and is actually willing to pay for it himself so that there's not a paper trail. It makes sense if you think about it logically from the perspective of Bush and Cheney.
Well, we don't have a draft these days, and so the military is limited as to the number of people it can send into any place. Is that why we're relying on these private contractors?
In part. I mean, people that I've talked to within the Special Forces community say, look, we've got a limited number of guys that know how to do these sensitive operations, and a lot of them are now in their 30s or 40s and they're retired. When the Congress placed force cap limitations on us and doesn't allow us to expand the size of Special Forces, what are we supposed to do? We turn around and we hire the guys that are already known entities to us. It used to be that they would be hired as individuals. Now you go to a company like Blackwater that has the market cornered on former SEALs and Delta Force, and it does make sense if you support the war, if you support this strategy. It's logical they would do it, but it raises serious questions about oversight and the actions that are done in our name.
I'm talking with Jeremy Scahill about the current situation of contractors in Afghanistan is on the second of our underreported segments today. Is part of the problem that the United States went into Afghanistan without the structures in place to manage a post-war environment?
The short answer to that is yes. I mean, if you remember, and I know you do, the early stages of the U.S. operations in Afghanistan, it was largely the work of 1,000 or so Special Forces operators that went in there, and they sort of masterfully took down the Taliban, which was a house of cards as it was, ready to fall.
But not enough to capture Osama bin Laden.
Well, I mean, and if you talk to people in the intelligence community, there's great hostility between Donald Rumsfeld and Colin Powell, people from within defense and state and the CIA, and there's a lot of finger pointing. But the fact is that Osama bin Laden got away, and many people blame that on Donald Rumsfeld and the failure to effectively take him out at Tora Bora. Now, to directly answer your question, the United States is expanding, and it looks a heck of a lot like nation building and a heck of a lot like an occupation when you're talking about 260,000 personnel.
Well, hasn't the United States stayed largely out of foreign development since Jesse Helms cut many of our international aid programs?
Right. And I mean, and if you look at the situation of USAID right now in Pakistan, USAID is starting, its operations are starting to look like an armed operation as well, because the amount of private security they require to do anything in country is incredible.
So the use of the private contractors is a way of getting around the restrictions that were imposed by Congress to stop us from giving money to foreign countries.
It is. And also, you have an additional barrier from congressional knowledge of these operations. If you have to do extremely sensitive takedowns of people or assassinations of people and you don't want them reported to the Congress, how do you do that if you're an administration? Well, you have to find private people that are willing to be off the books.
Blackwater is also involved in our drones program, isn't it?
Yeah. And in fact, a story I did recently showed that not only is Blackwater involved with the CIA's drone bombing program in Pakistan, as was reported by Jim Risen in The New York Times, but also they work for the Joint Special Operations Command, the elite special forces of the military, operating a parallel drone bombing campaign. So you have two U.S. bombing campaigns going on in Pakistan right now, CIA and military.
So the CIA dropped their contract on the drones program.
Well, that's what we're told. I mean, my understanding is that about 2 months ago, the CIA director, Leon Panetta, ordered a sort of, this is my word, not his, purge of Blackwater's work for the CIA. That's going to be a tough nut to crack, because these guys have been doing this for years. They know what they're doing. They're not easily replaceable. I'll wait until I see the Blackwater guys march on out of Pakistan and Afghanistan.
There's another security firm called Armor Group that was involved in a scandal recently. The State Department had contracted them to guard the United States Embassy in Kabul, probably would have had Blackwater in an earlier time, and photos emerged of Armor Group employees involved in drunken conduct, sexual hazing. What's happened to their five-year $187 million contract with the State Department?
Right. And this is also the firm that is owned by Wackenhut, which has huge contracts in the U.S. for private security and prisons, et cetera. This was systematic misconduct that dates way back to the Bush administration. And I do give the Obama administration credit for not renewing the Armor Group contract. But the fact is that the contract is up in June, and they've extended Armor Group for at least six more months. So it shows how deeply embedded that company is in the quote-unquote security of the embassy. But you're right to call attention to that.
Well, in the past, the military would have secured the embassy. We just don't have enough people there to do this. Does using private security contractors cost less than using military personnel?
No, in fact, the opposite. I mean, oftentimes the use of these contractors is much more expensive because of the overhead and the profits involved with the companies. With the military, you don't have a profit motive for developing a mission plan.
And this is a real growth industry, isn't it? A GAO report noted that worldwide, the U.S. diplomatic security budget has grown to $1.8 billion in 2008, and it was just $200 million in 1998.
Right. Well, in 1994, it was President Clinton that basically created this program that is now turned into this paramilitary division of the State Department. And it was envisioned as a small-scale bodyguard operation. When Iraq was invaded by the U.S., we had thousands of people classified as diplomats, making it necessary to provide them with diplomatic security. So what essentially happened is they created this huge private paramilitary force. And that's why you saw that budget swell. I think the last time I checked, there were maybe 36 actual government employees doing this in Iraq, and 3,000 private contractors.
In reports about that scandal involving Armor Guard, it was also pointed out that many of the non-American employees at the embassy in Kabul can't speak English, which makes coordination of activities rather difficult. Is that something that we're seeing all over the place?
It's metastasized. This particular aspect of it has just grown rapidly because companies like Triple Canopy, which is now the sort of replacement for Blackwater under the Obama administration, they hire people that are called third country nationals. They're not Iraqis or Afghans, and they're not U.S. citizens.
They're from Nepal and places.
Nepal, Peru, Uganda is the largest provider of TCNs, as they're called, for the operations in Iraq. And some of these guys, they hire them because they're cheaper. They have the military skill, but they don't speak English, and you can pay them a lot less money than you would an American. In fact, one of the reviews done of the Armor Group contract showed that some of the guards would be approached by an American, and the American would test them and say, there's a terrorist a few feet away from us. Can you do something about it? And the person would just say back to them, hello, mister. I mean, those are the people guarding the embassy in Afghanistan.
Earlier this month, the Army Times published a story in which they claimed the use of contractors is hindering counterinsurgency efforts. Its authors, Sean Naylor, wrote, the problem of out-of-control security contractors operating at cross-purposes to the coalition's counterinsurgency strategy is similar to the one that dogged the U.S. military and its allies in Iraq, with one major difference. Unlike Iraq, where there were a series of high-profile incidents involving U.S. security personnel, here the guards causing the problems are Afghans. So are we having problems with the Afghan military?
Absolutely. I'm working on a story now that's going to come out in The Nation tonight, but I'll mention what it's about. There was an incident in November where an Afghan national police officer that had been trained by the U.S. and NATO forces opened fire on the British soldiers he was on duty with and killed five of them, wounded six others in Helmand province. And the Taliban took credit for that, and this individual fled and hasn't been found since. What happened after that is that the U.S. began reviewing its relationship with all these Afghan contractors. Remember, Lenny, the number one nationality of all contractors in Afghanistan right now is Afghan. And so when you have these forces in such close proximity to the U.S., you're putting a tremendous amount of trust that they like you more than they like their fellow countrymen, be they Taliban or another resistance group.
And in Iraq, we diffused to some degree the counterinsurgency by hiring people. Actually, in effect, buying them off. The same sort of thing happening in Afghanistan?
Absolutely. I mean, in Iraq, it was more sort of systematic, where you were paying off people from the Sunni areas as part of the Awakening Councils, and you paid them not to kill the U.S. and, in fact, to hunt down other Sunnis. In Afghanistan, my colleague Aram Rostam from The Nation did a story recently on how 10% of the money that the U.S. is spending in Afghanistan is essentially money paying the Taliban and other groups not to kill U.S. personnel or to ambush U.S. Supply convoys. So we're funding both sides of the war there.
You quote one government spokesman in your article saying contractors are watching contractors nowadays. Right. So,
and that's a career military person that told me that, who is working in an oversight capacity right now, and said this is nuts that we're hiring contractors to watch each other.
And we've been talking about contractors in Afghanistan with Jeremy Scahill, a correspondent for The Nation, author of the book Blackwater: The Rise of the World's Most Powerful Mercenary Army. Do you see the situation improving? Is there a way to improve it?
No. I mean, I think the Obama administration wants to bring them under a system of law. I personally, in my years of studying this, do not believe that there's any way to oversee 160,000 contractors.
Thank you so much for being with us, Jeremy Scahill.
Thank you, Lenny.
On tomorrow's show, Justin Kirk and Tony Award winner Julie White discuss starring in the new Teresa Rebeck comedy, The Understudy. Then Daniel Egan on the 500 films that are in the National Film Registry and why you should care about them. Also, photographer Ted Cross on his new book about waterbirds, and Please Explain is all about hibernation. The Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blakeney Chick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we've helped with April Lovett Khan, Drew Katchen, and contributing producer Virginia Doris. Debbie Fountain and Mike LaPica were at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.